Welcome to Crash Concepts, where the economy, energy, and the environment are explored. Up next, fresh ideas and insights into the factors that are driving the world and shaping your future. Presenting information you can't afford to live without, here's Chris Martinson.
Welcome to another Peak Prosperity Podcast. I am your host, of course, Chris Martinson, and today we welcome back to the program Jim Rogers. Jim is one of those individuals whose accomplishments are too many to list succinctly. He's a renowned financial commentator, Guinness World Record holder, successful international investor, and author of a number of best-selling books, including Street Smarts, Adventures on the Road and in the Markets, just released on February 5th of 2013. He graciously agreed to join us today to help make sense of today's gravity-defying markets, where even bad news seems to drive stock prices higher. It's a QE to eternity world today. How do we chart a prudent course from here? Jim, thanks so much for coming back on the program today.
My delight, Chris. My delight.
Well, let's start with your take on the nature of today's markets. You've said that the Fed is throwing fake money after bad debts and we're all going to suffer. Yet you're bullish on Japanese equities because they are debasing their currency. How do you reconcile these views?
Well, there are a couple of differences, Chris. One is the Japanese market is down 70% from its all-time high. The U.S. market is at its all-time high. The United States is the largest debtor nation in the world, both internally, both domestically and internationally. The Japanese are the second largest creditor nation in the world on an international basis. They do have high internal debt, but there are differences in the two. And between the two, I had rather own shares in Japan, which is down 70% from its all-time high. Chris, it was 23 years ago that the Japanese market made its high. Mm-hmm. So I'd rather be there than here.
Absolutely. And so seeing the spat that Japan is having with China, noting that they're importing a lot of energy and that their current account deficit is slipping, does this cause you any concern?
Well, lots of things cause me concern. I wish there were an easy way to make money. I wish I could find an investment there were no concerns. Have you found one of those yet?
Well,
please tell me.
Well, let's talk about that. With force feeding by central banks everywhere, driving the price of everything to all-time highs, bonds, stocks, you name it, is investing even possible today?
Is investing possible these days? Well, Chris, you got to do something with your money.
Yeah.
Even if you just put your money in the bank, that's doing something because you got it there in some currency. No matter what you do, you have some kind of investment. So whether it's possible or not is one thing, but you got to do something with your money. And we are making a decision every day whether we know it or not.
I agree. Now, let's talk about commodities. You know, the last time you and I talked, that was 2011. You were quite bullish on commodities. I see that wheat has just put in an eight-month low. Corn is close to doing the same. Rice and soybeans are about where they were a year ago. Prior QE efforts were associated with huge upward moves in commodities, but not this time, at least not yet. What's going on?
Well, between 2011 and now, there were, you know, corn and wheat did have a skyrocket in rice. And a few other things, yes, they're down now. That's clear. But they did go up quite a lot during that period of time. As far as I can see, it's the fact that they went up so much, and now they're having a normal correction because whenever it's the winter, you know, people can speculate either way on what the weather's going to be in 2013, 2014. So we have what is a normal correction for this time of year in agricultural commodities. You can ask me in a year or two whether I was right about that or not, but I'm still bullish.
Well, you know, I see that global grain stocks are at 40-year lows on the basis of days of supply, and I just read today that a leading U.S. ethanol maker, that's Poet Refining, is bidding for red winter wheat because supplies of corn have fallen to the lowest in the U.S. in 17 years, and yet corn is still trending down. Is this just normal behavior or something else going on here?
Well, as I said, I think it's normal seasonal behavior. I know that inventories are at near historic lows worldwide for agricultural products. Not just that, Chris, you know, we're running out of farmers. The average age of farmers in America is 58, in Japan is 66. I could go on and on. More people in America study public relations and study agriculture. So, no, it's not just that inventories are low, we're running out of farmers, we're going to have gigantic problems in agriculture. A over the next decade or two. Whether they are up in 2013 or not, I'm not smart enough to know, but I know that prices have to go much, much higher to attract capital, labor, and management, or we're not going to have any food at any price.
I understand that view. Now, let's talk currencies for a minute. I see the dollar has rallied of late. It's now sitting at a little more than 82.5 on the USD index. The euro is now below 130. The pound just broke through 150 this aftermarket today. The yen's getting ready to break through that floor at about 106, off of which has been bouncing for a month. How do you see these currencies playing out from here, and which ones are going to win and who's going to lose?
Boy, Chris, if you can answer that, we're all going to be rich, aren't we?
I was hoping you would know.
I own the dollar not because I have any confidence in the dollar, not because it's sound, but it's a terribly flawed currency, but because I expect more currency turmoil, more financial turmoil, and during periods like that, people, for whatever reason, flee to the U.S. dollar as a safe haven. It is not a safe haven, but it is perceived that way by some people. That's why the dollar is going up. That's why I own it. Will I own it in 5 years, 10 years? I don't know. For the first time in recorded history, Chris, we have every central bank, or not every, but nearly every central bank, printing money and trying to debase their currency. This has never happened before. How it's going to work out, I don't know. Just depends on which one goes down the most and first, and they take turns. And when you say, or when one says, a currency is going down, the question is, against what? Because they're all going trying to debase themselves. So it's a peculiar time in world history.
Well, against what? Let's talk about, I guess, the one barometer that most people are looking at, gold. It's been stuck in a consolidation range for going on almost 2 years now. Are you still a fan of holding gold as a hedge against this debasement that you're seeing ongoing, or is there a better way to play this?
Well, I own gold and silver and precious. I own all commodities, which is a better way to play as they debase currencies. I own more agriculture than just about anything else in real assets, because of the reasons we discussed before. But you know, we were talking before about the perfect risk-free or worry-free investment. Even gold, you know, the Indians are talking about, Indian politicians are talking about coming down hard on gold. And India's the largest importer or the buyer of gold in the world. If Indian politicians do something, whether it's foolish or not, is irrelevant. If they do something, gold could go down a lot. So I own it. I'm not selling it. But everything has problems.
Everything has problems. Well, I'm looking at people who are thinking about being savers or those who want to invest. And recently you said that every nation in the world wants people who save and invest, because the people who save and invest build your country. But in America, we are destroying that class of people now. Is this what you're talking about, that we've destroyed investing because there's nothing prudent to invest in? Do you have more behind that comment?
No, of course. Throughout our history, any country's history, you know, the people who save their money and invest for the future are the ones that you build an economy, a society, a nation on. In America, many people save their money, put aside, didn't buy four or five houses with no job and no money down. They did what most people would consider the right thing and what historically has been the right thing. But now, unfortunately, those people are being wiped out because they're getting zero return or virtually no return on their savings and their investments. And we're wiping them out at the expense of the people who went deeply into debt. We're saving the people who did what most people would consider the wrong thing at the expense of the people who did the right thing. Now, this long-term has terrible consequences for any nation, any society, any economy.
Well, what are some of those consequences as you see them?
Well, I mean, you can go back in history. You see what happened to the Germans when they wiped out their savings class in the 20s. It didn't lead to good things down the road for Germany. It didn't lead to good things for Italy, which did the same thing. There were plenty of countries that wiped out the savings of the people who saved and invested for the future. And it's usually led to serious political reactions, desperation in some cases, and you're looking for a savior, and easy answers is usually what happens when you destroy the people who save and invest for the future.
You know, I've seen a couple of comments from Bernanke around this, specifically one. He was asked by a congressman how his low interest rates might have hurt savers, and Bernanke responded that at least the stock market was up, which is of no consolation, I suppose, to a 90-year-old pensioner living off of a fixed income portfolio. And I also heard Bernanke say that he was proud of the fact that people with mortgages had saved about $1 trillion in interest payments over the past 4 years because of lowered interest rates. That's about how much savers would have lost in income off of their bank accounts over the same period of time. So what you're talking about here is that we're really just, this is a transfer from those who would save and invest to those who would borrow and spend?
Yes, no, clearly it's pretty simple. Just figure it out. I mean, people have got money in the bank or bonds aren't getting any return. People who owe money, are being helped to some extent if they have variable rate mortgages. Not everybody has a variable rate mortgage. But the people who did or do and who can refinance are certainly saving money. Now, that's certainly at the expense of the banking system, too, unless they are very quick in debt. And the bond market, of course, is not people who own bonds. Mr. Bernanke was talking just about mortgage, the people who have mortgages. There are lots of other people who own bonds in many insurance companies are having serious problems and will down the road have worse problems. Pension plans, as you know, most pension plans in America are suffering grievously. Most of them are now underwater because of these low interest rates. I noticed Mr. Bernanke did not bring up pension plans, endowments, or insurance companies, mm-hmm. all of whom are suffering badly.
Well, now the Fed's on record as saying they're going to wait for a couple of signs, potentially one being unemployment returning to 6.5%. The other, if inflation ticks over 2.5%, they might consider an early termination or a termination of their QE program. Is that really what they're after here, do you think, or what are they looking at? People that I talk to are confused. Investors are confused. Professional money managers are confused because we have stocks at all-time highs. We have bonds at all-time highs, and yet we still get all this money printing. What is the Fed really up to here? What are they worried about?
Well, you said it. They're printing money. That's why bonds are up. They're buying gigantic amounts of bonds. That's why stocks are up. They're gigantic, flooding the world with money. It's got to go somewhere. They say they're going to wait for whatever inflation numbers they want. Well, you got to remember that the inflation numbers they control. And there are those, including me, who say that the inflation numbers which are being reported are a sham. They're not accurate. But since the federal government can control the reported inflation numbers, they make them look good. They have many reasons to, including Dr. Bernanke. So I have no idea what they're doing. I don't think they have any idea what they're doing. They say when interest rates or inflation gets to a certain level, they might do something. They say when inflation, unemployment gets to a certain level, they might do something, and maybe they will. But on the other hand, let's say that they start reversing themselves. Well, it's certainly going to cause a lot of excitement, a lot of interest in the markets if and when they start reversing themselves. You got to remember that the Federal Reserve, the central bank in America, has quadrupled its balance sheet in the last few years. I don't think that's ever happened in recorded history either. And a lot of the stuff they have on their balance sheet is garbage. So if and when they start reversing, it's going to cause more confusion or more interesting times in the markets.
Interesting times indeed. I don't believe that they've run any reverse POMO or reverse operation of any size. They were all under $1 billion. So we'll wait and see what happens when they try and get $1 trillion back out of the market. That'll be certainly very interesting. Moving on to China, I don't know if you saw it, but 60 Minutes had a big piece on what they called a Chinese housing bubble. You and I discussed it 2 years ago, back when I think there was a quaint price-to-income ratio in some major Chinese cities of around 20. In the CBS 60 Minutes piece, they noted it as high as it's 43 in the town city they were looking at. What's your view on China here? Are they actually as exposed? I mean, we all know they have something of a bubble there, but where do they go from here, and can they generate domestic demand to wean themselves off of being tied to their export vagaries, as it were? Where do you see China now?
Well, when you say there's a bubble in China, what kind of bubble? I don't know about. I know there was a real estate bubble, and it seems to be coming back, but what kind of bubble other than that? And that's coastal real estate. What kind of bubble are you talking that you see that I don't know about?
That was a real estate bubble where the price to income of housing in major cities had gone over 40, a huge ratio. That was noted there.
There's no question that there is and there was and perhaps coming back a a real estate bubble, a property bubble in urban coastal real estate in China. That's for sure, if that's what you mean. The Chinese tried to pop it. They spent several years, two or three years, I should say, trying to pop it. They did get it to come down. They did get things to cool off to a certain extent, and they continue to try to control prices and drive down prices of real estate. Unfortunately for them, the market has more money than they do, as usual, and some of their measures have not been as strong or as tough as perhaps they should have been, because when things do start going down, they get a lot of howls of complaint, and then they soften up. Prices are too high for some property in China, but it's not as bad as it was 3 years ago or so. I didn't see the 60 Minutes report. Usually 60 Minutes and most journalists are behind the time, so it would give one pause. I'm not going out to short Chinese property. Mm-hmm. Not yet, anyway.
Yeah, we talked about that real estate bubble a number of years ago, so you're saying they've taken some steps. But China, as it goes forward, how do you see them positioned for the next few years here?
Well, China's the largest creditor nation in the world. China's been doing a very good job. That doesn't mean they won't have serious problems. You know, in the 19th century, as America was on the rise, we had 15 depressions, had a terrible civil war, we had very few human rights, very little rule of law, et cetera, et cetera. Massacres in the streets, and yet we became a pretty successful country in the 20th century. China's going to have all kind of problems. I don't know what or when or why or how, but I know that's the way the world works. No company or individual or family or country rises without problems along the way. So China's going to have many problems. But whatever problems China has, the rest of us are going to feel the effect too, because they are the second largest economy in the world and the largest creditor in the world, etc. So if China goes into the tank, you better worry about all the rest of us too.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, final question here. You have two young daughters. What's your advice to the younger generations looking to build a prosperous future in today's world?
Well, the first advice, if you're an American, or anybody, but certainly an American, is you need to know at least two or three languages, because, you know, in the days of the 1950s, say, when everybody learned English and all you had to do was be American, well, those days are long gone. And if I were a young American or young anybody, I would make sure I spoke two or three languages, because there's going to be a much more international world going forward. We're going to have to know more about each other. Even if the world economy disintegrates and falls apart, it's still going to require the successful people to know about the world and be part of the world. And as you know, it's a terrible problem in America. We don't speak many languages at all. Well, as I say, this is not 1953. This is 2013, and that's not going to be a good thing in the future.
Well, everyone, we've been talking with Jim Rogers, author of Street Smarts, Adventures on the Road and in the Markets, now available everywhere. Jim, I trust some of that worldly view is contained in the pages?
Oh, yes, yes, yes. It's my view of the world and how I got to where I am, including plenty of mistakes along the way.
Well, if we're not making mistakes, what are we making? Probably nothing. So, Jim, thank you so much for your time today.
Very good. Anytime. Thank you.